Good evening, glad you're here.
If you'll open your Bibles to Mark chapter 1, we will begin our study there in just a moment as we finish lesson number 5. As Jesus is preaching in Capernaum, before we begin, we'll quiz. What did Mickey preach on Sunday? Mickey, what did you preach on Sunday?
Spirits of wind.
Okay, yeah. You believe him? You preached on, again, the spiritual man versus the carnal man. And again, talking about the conflict between the flesh and the spirit. And again, those things have been bouncing around inside of me, you know, since then, and that's a good sign. But as I think about that, and then we think about our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, did he understand anything about the conflict between the carnal man and the spiritual man?
Done that a lot.
He fully understood. Did he personally appreciate that conflict?
Yeah, sure he did.
He lived in the flesh as we did. And he had to control that carnal man. And he had to focus on the spiritual man. And one of the contexts that Mickey used on Sunday was from Galatians chapter 6. And again, in that context, about ye who are spiritual. And again, what did Paul talk about the fact that in regards to this conflict between the flesh and the spirit in verse 8, what did Paul say that we need to do to win this battle between the flesh and the spirit in verse 8? Galatians 6, verse 8. Yeah, I know, I told you to open up the Mark chapter 1. Open up there, yeah, there. In Galatians 6, 8, what did he say that we need to do?
So,
there's some importance in sowing, and in a very practical sense, what does that mean? We have to devote ourselves, and we need to invest, we need to spend time with the spiritual side, and sowing to that need. And again, did Jesus understand the need to sow to the Spirit? And when what we're talking about here in Mark chapter 1, we'll tie that in terms of Jesus sowing to the Spirit in this conflict between the flesh and the Spirit.
Sorry? After Mickey's sermon, it made me realize, you know, the Barbara was the one that was pretty isolated. And now that she's gone, I'm out in the life and in the world doing things, you know, going to school and stuff. And I'm being exposed to things in life I wasn't exposed to before. It's so easy to get wrapped up in this stuff.
It is very easy.
I have to be careful because I'm so naive.
Because the ruler of this world is trying to get us to sow to the flesh. And again, that's very strong. And so, yeah, that's absolutely true. We all have to be careful about that. And that's where I want to lead us in terms of, again, following Jesus. Jesus talked about that we need to follow him. And there's, as we finish this lesson in Mark chapter 1, there's a very powerful example in terms of sowing to the Spirit that we'll talk about. All right. So now, let's turn back to Mark chapter 1. And in Mark chapter 1, we talked about as we finished his efforts to talk about preaching in Capernaum, that, again, he was in there, and whose house did he go into and heal?
He healed a woman. Who was she? Peter's mother-in-law. And, again, what was her ailment? She had a fever. We talked about the fact that what did he do to achieve this miraculous healing? And the fever immediately left her. She began to serve them. And when this got out, we talked about the fact that the response of Jesus in the city of Capernaum was then at Peter's household, the whole city gathered at his door. Word got out about not only that healing, but again, what else had happened in the city of Capernaum that had created quite a bit of attention. We talked about last week. While he's in the synagogue. I'm sorry?
He
cast out the demon. And again, that and the healing of Peter's mother-in-law.
And again, we see the response of Capernaum that the whole city was gathered at the front door. And what did he do then that evening? Verse 32, when evening had come, after the sun had set, they began bringing to him all who were ill and who were demon-possessed, and the whole city had gathered at the door. And he healed many who were ill with various diseases and cast out many demons. And he was not permitting the demons to speak because they knew who he was. And so again, we see the response of the city. They're all there. But if I can get somebody to read verse 35 through verse 39. Leonardo, thank you.
In the early morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went away to a secluded place and was praying there. Simon and his companions searched for him. They found him and said to him, "Everyone is looking for you." He said to them, "Let us go somewhere else to the towns nearby, so that I may preach there also, for that is what I came for." And he went into their synagogues throughout all Galilee, preaching and casting out demons.
All right, so he had healed many. The whole city had gathered at his door. He spent that evening healing, casting out the demons. And eventually, at sometime during the night, he's like, "Got to go to bed." Folks left. They went home. And at some point in the early morning hours, Jesus had a need for something. And his need compelled him to get up. And what do we know about him in the early morning hours and getting up? Did he do it with a lot of attention and notoriety? No, because nobody knew where he went. So very quietly in the morning hours, he gets up. He slips out of the house. And he's not there anymore. We read that we don't know exactly where it was, but he got up the next morning, and again it says, while it was still dark. I know many of you get up while it's still dark. There's times during the year when I don't see my house in the daylight. But he got up by choice, not because he had a work schedule, but he made a choice that morning to get up while it was still dark and go to what is described as a secluded place. And what did he go to this secluded place in the early morning hours before the sun had risen to do? He went there to pray. He went there to pray. It's interesting, as we began this whole series on the life of Christ, as we were introducing the Gospels, there was one thing that Luke was noted for, as opposed to the other Gospels, that he talked about more than any other Gospel. He talked about Jesus praying. Luke recorded the idea of, recorded Jesus going to pray more than anybody else. And here we read in Mark chapter 1 of him going to do that. If you jump ahead to Mark chapter 6 and verse 46, if I get somebody to read that verse, Mark 6, 46. Bruce?
"And after bidding him farewell, he left on the mountain to pray."
All right. So again, we see here in Mark that after he had said goodbye, he departed to the mountain to pray. He again went to a secluded place. And I think, pardon my typo, that before 5:16, the word Luke should be there. Okay? And all those that follow were in the book of Luke. I have to fix that. So go to Luke chapter 5 and verse 16. Somebody read that for us. Luke 5:16.
"He withdrew himself into the desert and prayed."
All right. So, again, going back to verse 14 in that context, where it talks about that he had ordered, and we'll talk about this in just a moment, that he had ordered one who had been cleansed, "Go show yourselves to the priest, make an offering and cleansing to the most commanded." The news about him, verse 15, was spreading even further, and the great multitudes were gathering to hear him, to be healed of their sicknesses. Again, but he himself would, in the New American Standard, slips in italics often, and again, that's not there in the original Greek, but it just says he himself would slip away into the wilderness and pray. It talks about that as being a mode of life. It was something he did. Part of his life was to find opportunities. Let me change that. He made opportunities.
Because if he were, if I was to use the word find opportunities, how many times would he find an opportunity to be alone? Probably not very often at all. But would you agree that Jesus made opportunities to go to a mountain alone, to go to a secluded place? He made the opportunities to go spend time in prayer. We could jump ahead to chapter 9 of Luke in verse 18. In chapter 9, in verse 18, again, it simply says, and it came about that while he was praying alone, the disciples were with him, and he questioned them, saying, "Who do the multitudes say that I am?" We know that context where Jesus asked them, "Who do you say that I am?" We decided just before that, again, he finds himself alone. He leaves the apostles many times again to go and find the secluded time alone with God in prayer. You drop down to verse 28 of Luke chapter 9. And some 8 days after these things, it came about that he took along Peter and John and James and went up to the mountain to pray. You look down at verse 29 again. And while he was praying, the appearance of his face became different. You go to like Luke chapter 11 and verse 1. It says, "And it came about that while he was praying in a certain place, after he had finished, one of his disciples came to him and said, 'Lord, teach us to pray.'" They saw him praying. And they said, "Lord, this is something we want to learn about and teach us." And again, jump ahead to Luke chapter 22. And what's the context of Luke chapter 22 and verse 41? Just knowing that it's at the end of Luke, where are we in the life of Christ? We're at the end. I'm sorry, what was that, Randy?
I said he was arrested and crucified.
Yeah. And specifically, where is he in verse 41? Leonardo?
I'm sorry.
Okay. He's in the garden. He's in the garden, and he is about to lay down his life. And he knows that. At the most critical time in his life, what does he choose to go do?
Pray.
Go pray. He needed to go pray. And again, he left his disciples and went off by himself. And again, they evidently could still see him, but he went by himself. And at that moment, in a critical moment of his life, he went to pray to his Father. Leonardo?
In Luke 9:18, it said, "And it happened that while he was praying alone, the disciples were with him." Now, what do you mean there? Was he alone and they were with him? How could he be alone and they're with him?
Well, I would say it's probably like the scene in the garden when they were perhaps within eyesight of him, but Jesus ran off by himself.
Okay, I got you.
And what I'm trying to illustrate, and we're, as we go through the life of Christ, we'll study what he taught about prayer. But let's take note at this point in time, early on, about his practice of prayer. And it was something that he did in his life. Claire?
I think I've learned through him, as we've been studying this, is when we get tired and have a hard day, we take time off and go rest. But when he took time off to go rest to pray, and I haven't quite learned that part yet.
Well, you're right. And I guess the application for us is, we talk about the life of Jesus at this time, in which crowds are everywhere around him. And he could do nothing but heal and teach 24 hours a day, couldn't he? But it was important to him. No matter how busy things were, he said, "I have got to go get time alone in prayer. And if I have to get up at 3 a.m. to go out to a secluded place where people will have to hunt for me to find me so I can spend time in prayer." And this is where I was trying to tie it into the efforts of what we're talking about in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 8. When we talk about sowing to the Spirit, was Jesus sowing to the Spirit when he gets up at 3 or 2 or 4 in the morning and slips out and goes to a lonely place so he can pray along to his Father in heaven? That's sowing to the Spirit. Of, again, not finding time, but making time. Of not finding a situation, but making the situation where he can be alone with his Father in heaven. And so when we think about our lives, and again, that we've got our jobs, and we've got school, and we've got everything going on, is Satan pretty good at filling our day so full that we don't make the time to spend in prayer? And again, I think Jesus gives a very powerful example. Again, that idea of making time. And we also, we talk about things that need to be done, but I didn't have time, to get to that. But when it comes to sowing to the Spirit, and prayer has to be one of those powerful tools in which we sow to the Spirit, we've got to make the time. And all I can think is when Jesus gets up before the sun rises, slips out, and finds a secluded place, it's because he understood how powerful that is to his ability to sow to the Spirit. So again, when we ask the question, what are we to learn from this?
One thing, he lived what he taught.
Yes, he did.
He taught them to pray. He said not to pray like those do in the streets, but in the closet to pray. And he lived it like you see here, because he always went off to a quiet place by himself.
And I put the reference up there, Luke 19:46. I just found this interesting. When Jesus, again, would find places to be alone to pray, what did he say in Luke chapter 19, verse 46, about prayer in that context?
My house should be a house of prayer.
What was to be his father's house? It was to be a place of prayer. What had they turned it into? It was a place of merchandise. And did Jesus find that as an appropriate place to go and to pray to God? It was no longer a suitable place to go for prayer. He couldn't go to the temple. He couldn't go to God's, his Father's house to pray. He said, this is what it's supposed to be. But again, he went somewhere else. I just found it ironic that he said, my Father's house was supposed to be for this purpose, but I can't. Could you imagine the scene in that temple, as we talked about already, with the merchandising and the selling and the bartering and everything going on? You know, trying to bow your knees and prayer to your Father in heaven. And everybody's shouting, and get your sacrifices here. There's several hands up.
The disciples, did they pray as much as Jesus? I don't read too many times when they're going off to pray.
Well, that's an interesting point, and certainly in the Gospels we don't necessarily read of them. In fact, we just read of them seeing Jesus pray and looking at him like, we need to learn to do what you're doing. It teaches us to pray. And, prayer is not a natural endowed gift. It's not something you either have or you don't have. It's something you learn to do. It is something you make the practice to, again, find the place, find the time. And in the world we live in, which we've got TV, we've got radio, we've got internet, we've got everything else, you might say that Jesus demonstrates the need to have an effective prayer life, as it were, to be unplugged. Again, to take the distractions away, to make sure that those things that could distract their attention aren't there.
Yeah. To Leonardo's point, the Gospels are primarily a story of the life of Jesus. And so it would make sense that in Matthew through John, they're talking about what Jesus does and not so much focusing on what his disciples are doing. So, yes, he taught them to pray. We don't know how often they did it, but when we start getting into Acts and beyond, we see that they did have very robust prayer lives.
Good word, yeah. Good word. Very, very true. And again, it's about learning. And again, as they were learning to follow their master, we're called upon, again, to learn from Jesus. And again, that's why I find Mark 1 so powerful in terms of learning from Jesus. The need to, in our lives, with everything going on, to turn things off, to find some place where we can go undistracted, to pray, and then the other thing in life, in terms of sowing to the Spirit, is to find the time to study and meditate on God's Word. In terms of the two of the more powerful things we can do to sow to the Spirit.
Thinking about when the disciples asked,
can teach us to pray. I think of another example that they had that they would have possibly commonly seen because Jesus mentioned it. The Pharisees, what was the other example that they had? They have leaders who are, you know, sort of being very public and shouting out prayers that really aren't very nice, that are, you know, elevating themselves and putting somebody else
to be seen with them.
And that's supposed to be their leaders and their examples.
Right.
No wonder that they wanted to learn from him.
Yeah. So we'll talk a lot, and Jesus has a lot to say. In fact, he taught his disciples how to pray, and he had other, again, lessons in the book of Luke about how to pray and about persistence of prayer, and we'll talk about that. I just wanted to stop here at this point and take note of all these instances in which Jesus, again, would go and make the time and the opportunity to be alone to offer his prayers unto God, and we even read in one of those contexts, he would spend the whole night in prayer. That it was something important to him. And again, my point is about making the time. And we sing a song that has to do with time. And anybody think of the song I'm thinking of, the hymn?
Take time to be holy.
Exactly. Take time to be holy. And it takes time. And again, in the world we live in, we've got to make sure that we make the time to be holy. I know in working with the gentleman who helped me with my Crohn's and so forth, and he talked about, you know, he's helping me with diet and with exercise, and I talked to him about, well, I finding the time to exercise, and he goes, you'll never find the time unless you make the time. And we take the same approach, don't we, sometimes with sowing to the Spirit. With our truly meditating on God's word and prayer and stuff like that, we sometimes wait until we find the time as opposed to making the time. And again, I just think we see the powerful example of Jesus making the time. I'm going to get up before anybody else gets up so I can go accomplish this great spiritual need I have. Bruce?
We know Paul said in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, pray without ceasing.
Right.
And a little further down, he says, pray for one another. So you know that learning from Jesus, they continued in that.
Exactly. All right, so, Claire?
I do have a question about praying without ceasing. Exactly what does it mean? Because if you do without ceasing, you're doing it all the time, but I don't understand.
Okay. Well, and again, Mickey, I've heard you talk about this a lot. It does not mean that, again, we 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, have prayerful words coming out of our mouth. But if I were to say to my daughters, don't ever stop communicating with me, do I literally mean that I want them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to be on the phone in my ear? No, what we mean by that, and you've heard Mickey talk about this, is that we want constant communication. We don't want long periods of time to go by where we're not talking. And God doesn't want us to go days and months and weeks without talking to him, without praying unto God. And it's to be... Is prayer a powerful spiritual tool?
Yes.
Is it overutilized or underutilized?
Underutilized.
And I mean, isn't Paul's point, you use it more than you're using it? We need to, again, pray without ceasing in terms of use it and make the time. Make the time to use it. Find your place to go and concentrate on your spiritual needs and cast your cares upon him.
Yeah, I think you mentioned last week, set your affections on things above, not on things on the earth. You get invited to hear Christ God. But yeah, so that's where our minds should be continually. Prayer has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, again, it's a mindset. As Mickey talked about, Cindy, it's a choice. But it's a powerful choice we have to make every day. So again, he finds the time. He made the time. He got up early before the sun had risen, found a secluded place. And again, what was the response of his disciples? They get up and he's not there. Where did he go? And so They don't know where he went to. So what do? They play hide and seek. We're going to go find him. And the response of Simon Peter and his companions was what? Oh, we understand what you're doing. Is that what they said when they found him? Everybody's looking for you. Verse 37. Interesting, if you go over to Luke chapter 4, again, as we read Luke's account of this, not only was it that they, all the crowd and everybody in Capernaum now missed him and went looking for him, but somebody read verse 42 for me real quick. Luke 4:42. Carolyn?
When day came, Jesus left and went to a secluded place. The crowds were searching for him and came to him and tried to keep him from going away from them.
What do we know from Mark chapter 1 that Jesus said to his apostles when they found him? He said, we must go to the towns nearby so that I can preach, because that's what I came here to do. In Luke 4:42, those that found him, when he tried to go preach the gospel in other places, they did what?
Tried to stop him.
No, we don't want you to go away. Now, we don't know why they said that, but perhaps some might have said that because they wanted to learn more from him. Perhaps others said it because there was other miracles that they were looking for. They had other family members that he hadn't healed yet. You've got other work to do here. You know, you healed my neighbor's wife, but you didn't heal mine. We don't know why they said that, but they tried to keep him from leaving. But going back to Mark chapter 1, then Mark chapter 1, again in verse 38, let us go somewhere else to the towns nearby in order that I may preach there also, for that is what I came out for. And again, as we've talked about how Jesus began his ministry, he understood what he came to do. What he came to do was A, to prove who he was and to teach others that he was the Messiah, but he had teaching to do. And he understood that. And he had an urgency to that. And now that the whole city of Capernaum now had come to his door, and now there was the expectation. They're trying to get him to stay, and they don't want him to leave. Jesus is like, it's time to go. Because I've got teaching to do. There's people who need the message. The message, again, going back to Luke chapter 4, Luke records what this teaching is about. We know about this because he's talked to Nicodemus about this. And to the Samaritan woman, but he said, I must preach the kingdom of God to other cities also, for I was sent for this purpose. So again, there Jesus says, not only do I need to go preach, but here's what I need to go tell people about. I need to go tell people about the kingdom that is at hand, the kingdom that is nigh, the kingdom I came to establish, the kingdom I've come to tell people how to enter. And I've got to go tell people about that.
Jesus didn't come just to heal sick folks, restore sight to the blind, and that sort of thing. Though it seems that's what he gained popularity for, at least in some circumstances. He came to preach, and that's what the text tells us. The miracles that he did constituted credentials for him to preach.
And as we'll note here in just a minute, did he truly have compassion on those who were suffering in this life?
Sure.
He absolutely did. And his compassion for them, again, led him to indeed heal. But his overriding purpose, as Mickey just stated, I mean, it was like a clock ticking in his head. I've got, he knew that he had limited period of time. I've got to get the message out. I've got the kingdom to preach. I need to tell people how to enter the kingdom of what the nature of the kingdom is. I've got work to do.
Do we have any examples of his sermons?
How long
he preached?
Well, we've got some examples, and then again, it's like, do we have knowledge of Jesus' miracles? Yes, but what did John say about how many miracles, how big the book would be if all of his miracles were recorded? If we had a recording of every sermon that Jesus preached, how big would that book be?
It sure would be nice to have it.
But we do have some sermons of his.
But you can Sermon on the Mount?
Well, that's one of them, yeah.
Would that be considered preaching?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I can't wait until we get there. I can't wait. I'm going to get started right now.
I was just going to say that there's a parallel account in Luke, a little bit earlier in Luke, when he was in Nazareth. He went to the synagogue there, and they had the prophet Isaiah to them, and he read from it. He said, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he anointed." Oh, this is Luke 4, chapter 4, verse 18. "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to set free those who are oppressed, to proclaim the favorable year of the Lord." He closed the book and gave it back to the attendant, who sat down, and the eyes of all the synagogue were fixed on him. And he began to say to them, "Today, the scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing."
Yeah.
He told them exactly what he was there for.
Yeah.
By reading his aid.
The prophet said, "I was here to preach and to teach." Yeah.
And yet, I've had denominational friends who, in discussion, they'll agree, "Oh, yes, we need to follow Jesus' example." And then they say, "So we need to go feed the poor. We need to have these healing services, heal all the sick." And it's like, well, feel free to hand out some sandwiches or whatever it is you want to do, but that is not...
That was a job number one, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So again, everyone's looking for you. And again, we see it from a human... And can you imagine the emotion which the apostles came... The disciples came to Jesus. Everybody's looking for you. I mean, and from a human perspective, it's almost like, isn't that cool? Everybody wants you? I mean, that's kind of neat. Everybody's looking for you. And Jesus is like, it's not about... Again, trying to amaze audiences. But everyone's looking for you. And again, we've asked this question, and we'll address this. Why was everybody looking for him? And again, we don't know the motives of everybody, but we know that they would fall into two camps. Some sought him for spiritual reasons. Some sought him for physical reasons. And exactly what the proportion was, I don't know. But I would have to guess there was both. I just don't know, where the line fell.
That was the subject matter in John chapter 6.
Yeah.
Jesus rebuked them because they sought him for the loaves and the fishes. Those who sought him for the loaves and the fishes, the context of that, if I can use my term, is fascinating because they had just seen the day before all kinds of miracles. They had eaten a little boy's lunch to the extent that maybe 10,000 people, 5,000 men had been fed with it.
Yep. But they were sowing to the
flesh.
And that's what they were looking for. Again, and hopefully some who were seeking after Jesus here in Capernaum, hopefully some of them were sowing to the Spirit and they wanted to hear more from his mouth. As we hope that we would also. And again, we talked about Jesus' response, that he simply said, "Let us," and I left out a word, "let us go somewhere else to the towns nearby so I may preach the kingdom there also, for that is what I came for." We talked about the fact that, again, they tried to keep him from leaving. Again, we need you here. Going back to Mark chapter 1. And in verse 39, it says he simply that he went into their synagogues throughout all Galilee, preaching and casting out the demons. So again, he went through, we don't know exactly where throughout the Galilean region he went, but it simply says there in verse 39 that he went into their synagogues throughout all Galilee. He was busy. He was doing the work that he said, "I've come to do. I've come to preach. I've come to preach about the kingdom." And he went throughout all Galilee in the kingdoms, preaching and casting out demons. Beginning in verse 40, we read that a leper came to him beseeching him and falling on his knees before him and saying to him, "If you are willing, you can make me clean." Again, verse 41, and moved with compassion, he stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, I am willing, be cleansed. And immediately the leprosy left him and he was cleansed. And he sternly warned him and immediately sent him away. And he said to him, see that you say nothing to anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer for your cleansing what Moses commanded for a testimony to them. But he went out and began to proclaim it freely and to spread the news about to such an extent that Jesus could no longer publicly enter a city, but stayed out in unpopulated areas. And they were coming to him from everywhere. So we know that, again, many miracles were taking place, but Mark here records the miracle of one man. And to me, one of the interesting aspects about this leper who came to Jesus was the way in which he implored Jesus. How did he phrase it to Jesus?
If you are willing.
Isn't that interesting? If you are willing. What does that indicate about this man? Did he recognize that Jesus, again, had a will? And what did James write in James chapter 4 about our prayers unto God that we should recognize in our prayers to God?
God's will be done.
If the Lord wills. Do we recognize that God has a will? Should we recognize in our prayers to God and say, Lord, if you are willing? And it's not just magically repeating words, but it's having a heart that truly recognizes that God has a will. This leper approaches Jesus and, Lord, if you are willing. And again, I appreciate the humility in which he approached Jesus. Again, recognizing that Jesus had a will and implored him that if you are willing. And by asking in that manner, did he have faith in Jesus' ability then to do what he was asking? So I find it interesting, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. I know you can do this. It's a matter of whether or not you're willing to do that. It's not a question, can you? But Lord, if you're willing, you can make me clean.
It says he fell on his knees before him.
He humbled himself.
He was bowing down to him.
Yeah, a sign of homage.
Thank you.
Yeah. Think he had an idea of who he was, Mickey?
To go back and just kind of parentheses something from verse 39, when it tells us that he went into all their synagogues throughout all of Galilee, preaching and casting out demons. Sometimes, perhaps, a superficial reading of that, we don't realize just how big Galilee was. Josephus is quoted by Darby, and he says that Galilee at that time had about 240 towns and villages, and it had a population estimated at about 3 million.
That's impressive.
That's gigantic.
Carolyn, I didn't know.
Do we have any idea of how many synagogues there were, you know, like, did every town have one, or was the town a certain size, or is there any record of anything?
I personally don't know.
There had to be a certain number of Jews in a city in order to have a Jewish synagogue. I forget the number, but I know that when you come into the New Testament and look in Acts, the 16th chapter, you know that Lydia and certain women were meeting a place of prayer down the river, which indicates there wasn't enough Jews in Philippi to have a synagogue. So that gives us some indication. But when we're talking about the land of Palestine in particular, and in the province of Galilee in particular, when you note that there were 240 towns and villages, it would be likely that the concentration of Jews in that area would be sufficient to have a synagogue in most all.
Even if only half of that, that would be a huge number.
What did Jesus, what did we talk about a couple of weeks ago in terms of opportunities? What did Jesus say to his disciples about opportunities?
The
lift up your eyes and look into the field that they're riding to harvest. Again, coinciding with what Mickey's talking about, there in Galilee, the fields were white. There was a lot of opportunities. And again, that's why Jesus told his disciples, it's now time. It's time to go. We've got to act, we've got to preach, we've got to teach. There's souls to be gathered. No?
So I was going to say that Mark 3, where he said, you are they ordained the 12, that they should be within it.
Yeah, he's got people again now following with him, but again, who's the teacher?
Yeah.
He is. And again, I think your point was that there had to be a certain number of Jewish men, wasn't it? That to actually talk about the warrant of synagogue. Yeah, who's not for that purpose? Yeah.
I'm not asking too many questions.
No, you're good.
Now, he was casting out demons in a lot of these cities. Now, two people have more demons then than they have now. I mean, it's like, I got demons in just about every city.
Well, we kind of finished last week by talking about, there's a lot I don't know about demon possession, about how that works. There were a lot at that time. Absolutely. And again, there's a lot I don't know, but what I know is that those who had demons that possessed them, they were subject to Jesus, and Jesus had the authority and the power, again, the dunamis and the exousia, both of them, to order them to cast them out. And that's the real takeaway. We will always have questions about demon possession that we'll never understand. But we just need to appreciate the authority Jesus had.
That's maybe a clue, is in John 9, where it talks about the man being born blind, and they ask, well, why was he born blind? And Jesus says, to show the power of God.
Again, this a lot happened for the purpose that Jesus could demonstrate who he was. Right?
I brought this up after class last week, but I'll bring it up in class this week. The prophecy of Zechariah in chapter 13, beginning in verse 1, Zechariah said, in that day a fountain will be opened for the house of David and the inhabitants of Jerusalem for sin and for impurity. It will come about in that day, declares the Lord of hosts, that I will cut off the names of the idols from the land, and they will no longer be remembered. And I will also remove the prophets and the unclean spirit from the land. It goes on, but that particular verse tells us that in that day, talking about the days of Christ,
right,
that he's going to remove the prophets and the unclean spirit. We know from 1 Corinthians 13 that the gift of prophecy has ceased. We know from this verse that at the same time the gift of prophecy has ceased, unclean spirits have ceased. We don't have unclean spirits today. We don't have prophets today. And that's the direct result of this prophecy.
Okay.
So we don't have to worry about casting out demons anymore.
All right, Mickey?
And the Colossian letter in chapter 2, we've noted this passage in numerous studies, verses 14, verse 16, to indicate the conclusion of the function of the law and when that was fulfilled. But an interesting passage in that context, verse 14 and 15 in particular, having blotted out the bond written in ordinances that's against us, which was contrary to us, yet taking it out of the way, nailing it to the cross, having despoiled the principalities and the powers, he made a show of them openly, triumphing over them in it. Whatever the principalities and powers were, I'm convinced that these were ranking servants, if you please, demons, or whatever you may want to call them, of the devil. Jesus gained victory over them. I don't know of any New Testament passage after the crucifixion that identifies the apostles casting out demons. Now, there may be one, but I can't recall one.
Well, I think we talked about the seven sons of Sceva, in which, again, I'll have to think about that. But anyway.
The servant girl.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay, the servant girl, yeah.
But still within that era.
Right. But again, the apostolic era. Again, let's focus on this time. Like I said, we could go on in a lot of different directions and spend a whole study on demon possession and how it happened and so forth. But at this point in time, the point is, it's about Christ. And in the passage that Mickey just quoted from Colossians 2 is about his authority to disarm them. His authority over these demons, to cast them out, to order them out. And they're compulsion to do exactly what he told. It's about his authority and his power, and that's what he came to demonstrate and to show. So, real quickly, as we wrap this up, again, if you're willing, you can make me clean. Jesus, moved with compassion, said, I am willing. I am willing to heal you, be cleansed. We read about, again, what did he tell this leper to do? What did the old law say that a leper who was cleansed needed to do?
Show himself to the priest.
There was something that the law commanded that lepers do if they were cleansed to do. And Jesus says, in order to fulfill the law, you need to do what the law commanded. And he also told them to not do something.
Don't
tell anybody. Was he able to do that?
So much so that Jesus couldn't.
Yeah, and the impact was tremendous again there. It's
about Jesus' command.
I'm sorry?
Do you think Jesus really expected that man not to say anything?
That's an interesting question. Why, again, from what we've studied here in Mark chapter 1, why did Jesus tell him not to go and tell anybody? It was inhibiting his ability to preach the gospel. Again, he had to leave Capernaum because he could no longer preach there. And he went to, again, all around Galilee, all these 240 villages, preaching. But again, as Karen, I think you were the one who just noted, again, what was the impact of him? He had to go tell. And when he told, again, the news spread, and again, to such an extent that Jesus no longer could publicly enter a city. He couldn't go into these 240 towns anymore. He had to stay outside. And did staying outside the towns solve the problem?
They came to
him now. They went and sought him out. John, do you have your hand up?
Yeah, but I didn't want to get
bored. No, go for it. finish this off here.
The friends with the idea of how he showed that he was moved with compassion, I think is really telling. The aspect, how often did Jesus just speak to heal someone? The nobleman's son was near dead. He just spoke and healed him from miles away. But Jesus moved with compassion, stretched out his hand to touch a leper that nobody was supposed to touch or be around due to how infectious that could be. But moved with compassion, reached out and touched the leper, said, I am willing to be cleansed. And it really shows the confidence in the healing and
right. Jesus was willing to touch the unclean, both physically and spiritually. So, yeah, thank you very much. We've finished Lesson 5. We will begin next week. The questions for Lesson 5 are on the front bench. These are not them. These are my notes. But, again, you can get your own copy and create your own notes. But we will begin class next week going over the questions from lesson number 5.